Welcome to the Tipping Point Show. I'm Jimmy Evans. I'm so glad that you've joined me today. Today is a very special program because we're talking all about Israel, what's going on over there right now concerning Iran and the Iran attack last weekend, and now Israel's response to that attack. Brian Schrager is going to be joining me here in just a minute from Israel, talking about all that. Of course, he's been on the ground there this entire time, and so I can't wait to get Brian's insight on all of this. Now, before I get into this interview, let me just say we have our conference coming up September 20th and 21st. Dr. David Jeremiah will be there. We have Max Licato, Pastor Ed Young, Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, myself, Billy Crone, Dr. Mark Hitchcock. We're going to all be there on Friday night and Saturday morning, September 20th and 21st. Go to endtimes.com. Get your seat right now. Bring a group with you. We would love to have you. It's going to be a great conference. We also live stream it. And so if you can't come, you can watch it from all over the world, live stream it. Go to endtimes.com. Also, we do marriage conferences. You know, a lot of people associate me with the End Times, which of course I teach on the End Times. We also, I'm sitting in the studio of XO Marriage here in Southlake, Texas. And so we have a conference coming up this weekend in Houston. If you're married, you want to be married, whatever, it's at Grace Church in Houston, Texas. Go to xomarriage.com/conference and you can sign up and be there. I'll be speaking Friday night and this Saturday morning in Houston at Grace Church for this XO Marriage Conference. It's an excellent time just to tune up your marriage. Maybe you have issues that you're working through. Myself, Dave and Ashley Willis, Dan Leanne, Pastor Garrett Booth and his wife Andrea, we have some great speakers. You're going to get some great ministry. We'd love to have you. I'd love to see you there this coming Friday and Saturday. I'm pleased today to have joining me on the show our endtimes.com Israel correspondent, Brian Schrager. He's worked as a journalist in Israel since 2014, serving for 2 years as the head of the news division for Bridges for Peace, and in 2020 until 2021 as a bureau chief for the USA Radio Network. He's joining me today to talk about current events in Israel. Well, Brian, thank you for joining me today, and you do a great job as our endtimes.com Israel correspondent. We appreciate all that you do. This is a powder keg over there right now, to say the least. And last Saturday, you know, of course, Israel bombed the consulate in Damascus the week before, and Iran vowed a response. And of course, you guys saw the response last Saturday. You were in Jerusalem when that happened, weren't you?
I sure was. They started, you know, I knew the bombs were coming. That's when I filed a report on what, Sunday night, my time. It was about midnight. And then a couple of hours later, maybe 3 hours later, time was strange. All of a sudden, everything exploded right outside my porch.
Wow.
And I thought, what in the world? I didn't think enough time had passed for the missiles and the drones and the to come. But boy, they were there, and it was a fireworks show. I mean, right literally above me, I saw the interceptions. I saw bright orange buckyballs falling to the earth, which I think were continental missiles breaking up and falling down. It was very, very dramatic.
Well, you know, Israel's already on edge, and there's so much trauma. And that was just added to it. So, I mean, you guys are, you know, incredible for putting up with all that. What is Israel's response at this moment? Now, we're taping this on Tuesday. This is going to air on Wednesday. And so what do you hear about Israel's response to the bombing?
Right now, what is officially being said is that the war cabinet has met and is discussing a response and is promising to give one. What that response will be, how it will look, is not known. Netanyahu is having to be delicate in his communications with Joe Biden, because the US obviously is a big, big ally of Israel, supplying weapons and funds, and was an invaluable help on Sunday night when those missiles hit, because the U.S. intercepted a bunch of those missiles and drones, as in fact did Saudi Arabia, Jordan, the UAE, and I think France also intercepted or helped with all of this. So Israel did not knock down 99% of these missiles by itself.
Right.
It was a coordinated effort, and that was actually quite remarkable. And so now going forward, there's this thing that Biden has told Netanyahu, don't retaliate. Well, that's not going to wash here.
Right.
It just isn't going to wash.
Right.
The military here is absolutely determined that there must be a response, not for revenge, but because for deterrence. If there isn't a response, then Israel is perceived as weak. And in this part of the world, you have to respond.
Yeah.
And you have to respond in kind. Again, it's not retaliation. And Israel certainly has a lot of reasons, as you and I both know, to do something in Iran because of its nuclear program, and which is on the verge of developing nuclear weapons right now.
Right.
So what kind of response it will be, we just don't know.
Well, Jeremiah 49 is a prophecy against Elam. Elam is southern Iran. And the prophecy says, I'm against you. God says, I'm against you, Elam. And I'm going to knock the bow out of your hand in the height of your power, and I'm going to judge your princes, not the people. Because the people of Iran, you know, millions are turning to Jesus and you know, getting saved.
Yes,
but
they are.
The leaders in Iran are corrupt, and they, of course, believe that Allah has called them to destroy Israel and to usher in the end time. So this is a religious war. This is not just a conventional war. This is a religious war. You agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, as I'm sure you're aware, Ali Khamenei, the so-called supreme leader of Iran, has repeatedly over the years said that Iran's number one goal is to provoke the return of the Mahdi, the Islamic Messiah figure, who is going to come in, according to their theology, he's going to come in and set everything right. And so part of the reason for creating chaos is to provoke the Mahdi to come. This is a cardinal doctrine in Iran, but the world doesn't discuss it because I think it's uncomfortable with this whole idea of the theological motivation, the religious motivation that is behind what Iran is doing.
And the problem, Brian, with the world's response in trying to pressure Israel into a two-state solution, they don't understand the religious ramifications of this. Hamas is an example. Hamas is Muslim. It is a Muslim group that is vowed to the annihilation of the Jews. Well, the Palestinians in other places in the West Bank, they believe the same stuff. That's why the Palestinian Authority won't renounce October 7th or Hamas, because they're very popular among the Palestinians.
Exactly. And Abbas does not want to lose political power. So, you know, eventually he has to pass away, I think. He's in his 80s.
Oh, yeah.
He is immensely unpopular among the Palestinians, and yet Hamas is very popular.
Yes. What a dangerous combination. And we're trying to push Israel and the Palestinians in bed together and tell them to make up and get along. It's impossible. And that's why the resolve of Netanyahu, and I think this is true of the Israeli government, is never again. There's not going to be a deal with the devil. Is that right?
Absolutely. And also, I think it's important to note that the Palestinians don't believe in a two-state solution. They absolutely don't. It's been off the table in Palestinian narrative here for at least a decade. They have been promoting a one-state solution, which basically is bring back all of the refugees from Jordan, from Syria, and basically establish a government here that is the majority is Muslim, not Jewish, and so the Jews are basically defeated as there's no Jewish state. So that's their one-state solution, and Israel knows this, the Palestinians know this, but there is this political narrative, this kind of magical thinking that persists throughout the rest of the Western world that somehow a two-state solution is doable. It's not. And both sides know it here.
Exactly. Well, if you look at everything from a secular perspective and you just wipe out the religious, the deeply held religions of that area, everybody should be able to get along. Everybody should be able to be at peace. This is generational. This goes back many generations of hatred and all those types of things. So the Bible says at the end, Israel will be hated by all the nations. that all the nations would ultimately gather against Israel at Jerusalem. Of course, that's Zechariah, you know, that's Joel 3, all through the Old Testament. So this is what we're seeing happening, unfolding. Let's talk about Iran for just a minute now. The red line that existed has been erased. For the first time, Iran has directly attacked the state of Israel. Okay, so now, in the world, for the last few days at least, Iran has been under scrutiny. There have been many nations that have rebuked them for what they did, standing against them. Is there any practical penalty that they're playing, as in sanctions or as in anything like that?
Well, the one benefit to Israel in all of this is that, at least for now, international opinion has shifted somewhat back in favor of Israel. The international opinion was condemning Israel very, very strictly and firmly up until the attack because of its war in Gaza. Now there is this condemnation of Iran, and you know, we can only hope that there is some degree of waking up on the part of Western nations about what Iran's ambitions are, which is to establish a global caliphate. It's not a regional thing. They literally want to see the world taken over, led by their Mahdi, which is, I think, how you say it in Arabic. So I don't know. I think in the end, the military here is very, very clear. As you know, I recently interviewed Brigadier General Amir Avivi, and it was just, I think, posted yesterday. Now, that interview took place before the attack, but the doctrine he laid out there for Israel is the same doctrine that exists today, which is that we must be strong. Hamas must be defeated. Hezbollah must be pushed back. Israel cannot allow this situation to continue in the north with more than 60,000 Israelis displaced from their homes and their businesses. This cannot continue. And then, of course, we all know that at the center of the spider web is the spider, Iran. And Iran has to be dealt with. When I spoke with General Avivi, I said, don't we risk, if we take on Iran, I said, don't we risk stirring up the hornet's nest of the new global alliance that's trying to take place with Iran, China, Russia, and North Korea, maybe Turkey? And he said, no, just the opposite. He said, if we don't respond, then those entities become emboldened. They believe that, I mean, all we've done so far is our sanctions. And they're overcoming those sanctions. That's with right. Their economic coalition. So they believe that the United States has the ability, the military ability to respond, but they don't think it has the will. And he said, as long as they believe that, they're going to just get worse and worse. I mean, Russia has invaded Ukraine, and, you know, it might be Poland next. It might be the other parts of Europe. As for China, it's been, you know, threatening Taiwan for a long time and flying jets and, you know, invading its airspace. It at some point, it seems like it's determined to take Taiwan for its own. So he said, if we don't respond, he said, but when you have a coalition like this, there are, you know, the strong ones. He said, it would be foolish to attack Russia or China. Go for the weak one. The weak one is Iran. And he said, if we give a strong response to Iran, he said, we, not just Israel. He meant a coalition, especially with the help of the United States. He said, the U.S. has to partner with us in this and go after Iran. And that will send an unmistakable message to Russia and China and this new attempt to form a new global order. And it will tell them, no, we are willing to stand firm. We're not just going to do words and sanctions. We're willing to fight for what is right.
That's exactly right. Well, you said something earlier about Iran's desire for world domination. See, the word Islam means submit. And their vision is for world submission to Islam. And Netanyahu has said repeatedly, if we're not fighting Hamas just related to Israel, if they beat us, they're coming for you. And that's exactly right. That's like the Nazi regime. You know, you don't exterminate this here, it's going to spread all over the world. And of course, there's Muslims all over the world that would be greatly emboldened by a victory over Israel. So southern Iran, the Jeremiah 49 prophecy is a devastating blow on Elam, southern Iran. Interestingly, that's where they have the Bushehr nuclear facility. That's where they have many of their missile launchers and their missile, their nuclear facilities. God says, I'm going to knock the bow out of your hand in the height of your power, and I'm going to judge your princes. And it says, there it will be so desolate in Elam after the devastation, there won't be a nation on earth where someone from Elam hasn't moved. So this is talking about a devastating attack. And of course, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen in the next few days, but it could.
Well, you know what? At this point, for my part, I hope it does, yeah. But we'll see.
Well, so is the IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency, they have turned a blind eye to Iran. Iran has defied the world community related to nuclear weapons. And recently, the IAEA came out and said, we have no idea what's going on in Iran, but we do know they've made tremendous strides. So they have a hypersonic missile in Iran that can reach Israel in, I think it's 4 minutes, or it's 400 seconds, 6.66 minutes. And so I think the missiles that came in last weekend, it took 4 or 5 hours for them to get there.
Well, there were a mixture of things, and some of them were intercontinental missiles. And or ones that can go, I think, a range of 1,500 miles. I forget what the name of them. But they were launched later, and they did, in fact, arrive in Israel about 6 minutes after they were launched. So the drones were launched, and those took several hours. But they waited until the drones were close, and then they fired some of these other missiles, which came in rather quickly.
Well, the 2 years ago, my book, Tipping Point, came out, and in the book, Tipping Point, I predict that Israel will strike Iran because it's an existential threat. Not only was the attack last weekend, but if they have a nuclear weapon, Brian, they're going to fire it at Israel. And one nuclear missile landing in Israel is game, set, and match. It's devastation. And so it's an existential threat. They have now given Israel an opportunity to respond. Now, again, we don't know exactly how that response will play out. But the thing, Israel is known for decisive responses to military attacks. They're strong. You punch them, they're going to punch you back harder. And so whatever happens, I believe, like you, and like you, the general you were talking to, I believe it's going to be a decisive blow. So let's just say that Israel does respond here in the next few days. What is Israel's capability militarily to defend their borders? I mean, they've got a multi-front war going on, and it just seems like they're spread really thin.
They are. The military objective that Israel embraced from October 7 forward was, first, defeat Hamas, defend ourselves against Hezbollah, because there was a very keen concern that Hezbollah may launch a full-blown attack too. That was on everybody's minds on October 7 and 8. They didn't, but they have entered into the fray, and what's been going on with Hezbollah in the north is a virtual war. But Hamas has to be defeated first. Now, that whole doctrine has been kind of mixed up or upset now because of the attack from Iran on Sunday. So it's you know, we're engaging in speculation here. There's no doubt that Israel is spread thin in terms of manpower, and it really doesn't have, in my opinion, it doesn't have the necessary personnel to take on a full-blown war on two fronts. Now, as we have seen, Israel, in fact, withdrew most of its troops from Gaza before this attack from Iran, perhaps in anticipation of it, perhaps in anticipation of invading and dealing with Rafah in the south of Gaza. We don't know. I mean, this has been actually perplexing and troubling to a lot of Israelis. Why did we do this? Maybe they're ready for something to happen in the north. They knew that there might be a need for their personnel to go up there. Also, people needed a break. I mean, a lot of people hadn't seen their families or been to their work for months. So Israel has a lot of air power and military power, but it doesn't really have the personnel to do to fight a war on two fronts. If it goes after Iran right now, it's not going to be sending troops on the ground, obviously, to Iran. It's too far away. And if Iran decides to actually do something in a major counter you know answer and authorize Hezbollah to launch its 100,000 plus missiles, which can hit any place in Israel, then yeah, it's going to be problematic. But it's not going to be so much a boots on the ground thing. It's going to be all these missiles coming in again, like it was on Sunday.
It's not going to be a conventional war. And Israel has tremendous firepower militarily. You know, so let's talk about politics for just a minute, Brian. So Netanyahu is under fire, under scrutiny. Is there a movement to oust him?
Well, there's before October 7, there were about half the country was, you know, out in protests at least every Saturday night after Shabbat, calling for new elections. The coalition that Netanyahu put together after this last election is unlike any other coalition he's had in the past. In the past, his coalition has included the Haredim, the ultra-Orthodox Jewish parties, but he's always had a moderate non-religious party as part of the coalition. And so what he was able to do was he was able to say to the ultra-Orthodox, I can't really do what you want me to do right now, because if I do, this other part of our coalition will leave and the government will fall, okay? That's not the case anymore. Now, everybody in his coalition is from these ultra-Orthodox religious parties. And his government is held captive to that. It can't stay in power without them. And so they've been driving an agenda which is often problematic. One of the things that is the greatest irritants in Israel is that the young men of these Haredim do not serve in the IDF. And we need the personnel. We need the boots on the ground. Now, they would not have to be even in battle. They could be doing support work, volunteer work, you know, working with in the background. But they won't do it. They absolutely resolutely refuse. And this is, you know, when you have others, every Israeli here has a family member, a friend who's either wounded or fallen in battle. I mean, it is visceral here. And then to have a group of people within the country say, no, we're not going to do anything. We refuse to serve, to defend this country. But by the way, we want all your money. We want your money to come in to fund everything for us, but we won't pay we don't pay taxes because they don't work and they won't fight in the military. This is not a formula for endearing the government to the rest of the culture. So it's not, you know, sometimes I think in the U.S., what's happening in Israel is framed as if it was a U.S. left-right issue. It isn't so much like, it isn't that. That's there's some of that, but it's actually more of a religious to moving toward secular, if you will. But it's a religious, ultra-religious to non-religious spectrum.
You know something, the good news in all of this is Jesus is coming. Jesus said, when you see all these things begin to happen, look up and lift up your head, your redemption draws near. And I believe that Jesus is, the rapture could happen anytime. Nothing else has to happen for the rapture to happen when Jesus comes for his church. Everything happening, all the signs of the times are pointing to the fact he's at the door. And so I'm just saying that's the exciting part is we're not going to go through the tribulation. We're not going to go through the wrath. We're not going to see the Antichrist when he appears. We're going to be with Jesus, and I believe he can come at any minute. And so I want to thank you for being a subscriber to endtimes.com. If you're not a subscriber, go to endtimes.com, become a subscriber. But I also want to ask you for some help today. You know, months ago, we did not have Brian Schrager as our Israel correspondent, but we needed one. And I asked you guys to help us financially, and you did, and we hired Brian. Brian's been a huge blessing. And to have him on the ground right now with everything going on there is just a huge blessing. And so thank you for helping with that. We have three production positions that we need to fill. here at endtimes.com. We're growing. We're trying to reach more people. We're trying to reach you better than ever. We don't raise our price for a subscription at $7 a month, but we do ask you if you would pray about helping us. Some of you, the Lord has blessed you financially, and you have that ability. I'm just saying we need you. These are the end times, I believe, and I believe this is a critical message to be sent out to people in the midst of all the anxiety and the deception that's happening. People need the truth, and so we rely on you to help us financially to do everything we do, and right now we need several production positions. And so go to endtimes.com if you can help us. Some of you have really been touched by this ministry because you tell me. You write in or I see you on the street and you tell me. And if this ministry's touched you and the Lord's blessed you financially, would you help us? Anything that you give is going to be a blessing. Some of you could give more. You give an extraordinary gift to help us. We will use that to help to hire some positions to grow this ministry, to reach people, as many people as we possibly can before the Lord's return. Go to endtimes.com, right there where it says donate. You can give a recurring gift or you can give a one-time gift. Either way, we appreciate so much every single thing you do to help us. And I know that you like our programs. Many of you tune in, but we hope it's a blessing to you. And we're going to keep you up to date on anything that's happening in Israel, Israel's response to Iran, Iran's further response, all the things happening over there. We're going to keep you up to date. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'll see you next time. God bless you.